Welcome to the Enterprise Ireland MENA podcast, your guide to winning business across the Middle East and North Africa. Each month you'll find insights from leading industry figures, in-depth analysis on emerging market trends, as well as helpful advice on how best to succeed across the MENA region. Enterprise Ireland is the Irish government's trade and innovation agency. For more information, please visit enterprise-ireland.com and irishadvantage.com.
Welcome to the first episode of the Enterprise Ireland Middle East and North Africa podcast. I'm Jack Larkin, your host and Trade and Development Executive for Enterprise Ireland MENA. First and foremost, I hope this finds you and your family safe and well during what I think is fair to say a very uncertain and challenging time for everyone. The world as we know it has changed, and it is our hope with this podcast that we can help keep you up to date with the rapidly changing and shifting dynamics across the MENA region. Before introducing our guest for today's episode, please keep in mind that the information in this podcast may not be the latest available. However, with that said, we will continue to ensure we have the most up-to-date information at the time of recording. So, without any further delay, I'm delighted to introduce Mike Hogan, Regional Manager for Enterprise Ireland for the MENA region, who will be giving us a regional update on today's episode. Mike has worked with Enterprise Ireland for more than a decade, holding previous international management positions in Russia and Poland before moving to Dubai 4 years ago. Mike, thanks for your time today and for launching our new podcast series.
Thanks, Jack. I'm delighted to be taking part, and hopefully Irish companies will get some use out of this podcast, particularly those that are interested in exporting or establishing their business in the wider Middle East.
Thanks, Mike. So to kick us off, can you give us an overview of what it is that Enterprise Ireland is doing for client companies and the different support mechanisms that they've put in place specifically around COVID-19?
Well, I think as many people recognize, COVID-19 is a very special set of circumstances. It's almost it's an unprecedented, what often referred to as a black swan incident. And in terms of our own planning, in terms of what we're doing, I suppose if you talk to me earlier on in the year in January, February, we'd be having a totally different discussion. It's really changed the whole dynamic of this year and potentially going into next year. I suppose in real terms, there are two aspects to how we're dealing with COVID-19. Firstly, in Ireland, we're working with our clients in a tailored manner to support them, make changes to their business model to survive. Also, we have some examples would include a lean manufacturing fund, which helps companies that are looking at changing their production methodologies, methods to, make themselves more competitive. We have programs available to assist companies to move their business model online. We have a fund which relates to sustaining companies, which is, again, to help companies through the short-term consequences of COVID-19. In addition to what Enterprise Ireland does, there's a whole raft of government-sponsored initiatives as well, some of which will be transmitted through Enterprise Ireland and some of them through the Strategic Ireland Development Fund. So there's a very comprehensive suite of services that Ireland Inc. is providing it back in Ireland. And people will also know about some of the funding arrangements that have been put in place so that workers, a portion of workers' wages are paid by the state in the, most difficult period of COVID-19. Moving overseas, well, the circumstances there are slightly different. And what we're offering is really, first of all, is continuity, because a lot of our clients are now absent from the market and they have to find new ways of reaching out to the clients, to communicate with them, to keep their clients well informed about what's happening, but also in terms of delivering their products and services, sometimes in the absence of face-to-face. So, a lot of our companies don't have physical presence on the ground and therefore have to continue servicing their clients from overseas. Similarly, we're working with our clients to help them understand the dynamics of the market in the wider Middle East during COVID-19. To get them to understand also some of the situation for their end users, some of their concerns, some of the issues they're facing, which in many cases are similar to what companies are facing in Ireland, but there would be specific market differences as well. And also, you know, on a really simplistic level, is to understand how business models may need to be tweaked to better service their clients in the near term, but also looking forward to, I suppose, what we would refer to as the new normal towards the end of the year, moving into 2021.
You mentioned there, Mike, that businesses will have to make adjustments or tweaks to their business plans. Can you just give our listeners a better insight into what the current situation is here in Dubai and indeed across the Middle East in general, and outline the measures that have been implemented by governments locally to try and contain the virus?
It's in many cases, if you look across the Middle East, a lot of the measures taken to combat COVID-19 have, from an Irish perspective, perhaps been a lot more draconian than companies and people back home would actually understand. We've had the issuance here of 24-hour curfews, where people have only been let out of their homes for very specific reasons, for simply buying groceries or going to chemists, going to pharmacy. And at the height of the restrictions in Dubai, that was a requirement that you could only leave the house between certain hours every 3 days to get groceries. While there has been some loosening of activity here, the economic impact has been very, very severe, particularly if you look at a market like Dubai in the UAE, which relies very heavily on tourism and is recognized also as an international transportation hub. Essentially, you've had the virtual shutting down of all air movements in and out of Dubai, except for cargo flights. And all businesses effectively have been run on a remote basis. So from an Irish company point of view, that's a first key element in understanding how their end users are approaching and undergoing the COVID-19 lockdown situation. That has consequences in terms of how physical goods are brought to the market. Freight rates have certainly gone up. The availability of direct flights from Ireland for cargo as well as passengers has affected the price of bringing these products to the market. Likewise, new transport hubs through London are active in terms of cargo, but certainly those rates and the prices for bringing product to market here are significantly higher than they had been prior to the COVID-19 situation. And, new normal for in many cases will be an unwinding of that and how Irish companies react to a situation where some of those links begin to come back into play. Some products will not be competitive in the current circumstances. They'll require a change in the logistics dynamics and also the market dynamics here before they become competitive again. If I look at across the wider region, it's the same situation in places like Saudi, which is the biggest market we have in the Middle East region. Saudi is again under a fairly draconian lockdown situation. We don't have the network in terms of direct flights into Saudi, so correspondingly, there's a higher cost of bringing products to market there. So it really, many of our clients are facing the situation of going and continuing to talk to their end users here, keep them fully informed what's going on. And that's important because nature abhors a vacuum. You need to be talking to your clients. There's nothing that kind of worries people more than silence. So one of the key messages we have for our clients in the market at the moment is to keep talking, keep communicating, particularly in a market like Saudi, UAE, where people are very used to face-to-face time. It's very important that they feel that you understand their situation. And, as one takeaway from all this, and I think this is generally understood, that people remember who did business with them during hard times. It's easy to do business when times are good. But people often reflect back on who stood by them when their business was in jeopardy or difficulty. And that is a moment of truth for a lot of our client companies in terms of their client relationships with companies throughout the wider Middle East.
Thanks, Mike. You outlined in great detail there how a lot of industries are suffering at the moment, and specifically you mentioned aviation and how the price of cargo has increased drastically since this crisis began. But I'm also conscious that with every challenge comes opportunity, and I'd be very interested to get your thoughts on where you think those opportunities will lie in the coming 12 months.
Well, I suppose there's a basic bedrock in everything we look at in terms of the Middle East, and that's demographics. So one thing that's is the linchpin here that's really driving, had been driving growth and had been driving activity prior to the COVID-19 situation, is large scale increase in the population, particularly in countries like Saudi Arabia. So at a very basic level, there needs to be a maintenance of the requirements that a state has to provide for a growing population. The key one currently is obviously healthcare. So even, a country like Saudi Arabia, which a number of years ago had cut back on its infrastructure projects, was still adding something in the region of, 5,000 hospital beds per year. Those sort of, build out of facilities and build out of infrastructure has to continue. The population growth hasn't stopped. And the same can be said across many of the countries in the Gulf. So if we look at areas, when we talk about healthcare, we're talking about not just provision of, let's say, basic healthcare services, which has really been put under the microscope in the last few months, but going forward, a whole revisiting of what it means to have a healthy society and how different parts of that society live and work. So not just in healthcare, but we're talking about more broadly in areas such as health and safety and how people work, how people get to work, what they do at work. That's all going to be part of the new normal, and that will generate opportunities. Certainly in the purest sense of healthcare, certainly there'll be a continuing drive to increase the level and availability of healthcare services across the Gulf to reflect a bigger and wider population. And the same issues would apply in terms of education, because education will still continue to have to reflect the growing population. And these are very youthful populations. If you look at Saudi in particular, you're looking at a population where over half the people in Saudi are probably under the age of 25. You're from a marketing perspective across the wider Gulf region, you're talking about marketing not just to native populations, but also populations that include a very high level of expats, migrant workers. So these are really interesting markets in terms of, as a selling opportunity. In many ways, you can test a product here and get a very wide number of, reference points in terms of market reaction, because you're dealing with a very large collection, a very different collection of nationalities, cultures, traditions, in terms of how they react to products and services. More broadly, the oil shock will also have repercussions. And, many of the countries that we deal with in the Gulf and the wider Middle East regions all have advanced plans to increase their non-oil revenue. So this will certainly be a blip. In the next couple of years, some of those plans will have to be tailored back. But on a basic level, again, we're talking about wide-scale build-out of, port, freight, logistics facilities. We're also talking in real terms about industry. So a large part of the development plans of many of the countries in the region is to upscale their industries. Certain countries are ahead on that. If we look at the wider region, it's really Egypt would have the largest industrial sector in the Arab world, Saudi to some extent. But I think one thing to watch out for is certainly what one of the main effects of COVID-19 is for people to reevaluate their supply lines, their supply chain, particularly as it relates to bringing in essential items. Food security was always a key issue in the Gulf. It's something that they were very mindful of because of their status as a net food importer. But I think this is going to go much wider now in the year ahead. People are going to be considering where they get their products from, how fast they can get their products from. And I think in some cases, some countries will look to reinvigorate their indigenous manufacturing capacity to fulfill a certain minimum level, so that if a situation like COVID happened again, they would never be left in a limbo period in between, that they would have sufficient local resources to meet those type of demands.
That last point in particular, Mike, is very interesting in terms of how you see this new trend emerging across the Middle East, whereby there would be a renewed focus on shortening the supply chain and an increase in the level of local manufacturing. Can you please elaborate on that for us a little bit more? And also the point you made on education, can you go into a little bit more detail on how you see the education sector being impacted across the Middle East as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic? And also in particular, how you see that impacting the work that Irish HEIs are doing across the Middle East?
Thanks. Yeah, well, I suppose both cases are still evolving, but I suppose what I would look at the moment in education is the fact that we have a situation where there are two traditions in play. One, if you look at third level, a capacity building exercise within the Middle East region, where this is a continuing build out of their own educational institutions. But that's done in parallel with a large number of students from the region going overseas to study in places across the world. And we've been very lucky in Ireland to garner a very substantial share of that market, both through scholarship programs and through the self-funded market. I suppose what the COVID-19 crisis has done is really brought to the forefront the situations when things go wrong, when universities are emptied, when there's uncertainty over the start times, or when people can move to start their new academic years. So within that, obviously, remote learning has come into play. And I think in the case of some universities internationally, it's given them a kind of an impetus to actually, you know, start rolling out a more extensive program of remote learning, particularly around the uncertainty of the start of the academic year in September 2020. I think in many cases, that's something that's more of an aspiration than going to be an actuality. I don't think at this point in time, the large-scale student body or indeed the people that finance them in the Middle East are quite yet ready for remote learning in the fullest sense. But certainly, I think universities are going to have to think more carefully about blended learning, where portions of the course might be delivered online, and that's supplemented by face-to-face contact through lectures and tutorials. Where those take place, for example, do they take place in Ireland? Do they take place in country? I think more and more countries are going to look to develop their own educational capacity internally. So the type of cooperation that we're going to see between universities in Ireland and the wider Middle East, I think, is going to necessarily have to change. And I think you'll keep some elements of the old, but more and more the situation will start to evolve. You also look at some countries that are really, really expanding their educational system to meet the needs of the region. So if we look at a country like Egypt, for example, at the moment, and New Cairo, there are, I think, in my last estimation, somewhere between 5 or 6 universities currently being built there at the moment. And they're not just there to, you know, service the very burgeoning population in Egypt, which is growing at 2 million people per year, but also as to provide, to see themselves as a hub to provide educational services to the wider Middle East region. In some places, taking over from some other countries that have a longer tradition, Lebanon, for example, which we've had a long tradition in that. We'll see, new providers of education coming into play. And those aren't necessarily coming from the state sector. One of the key aspects of Egypt as an emerging education power is the cooperation between the corporate sector to create private universities, where they look for partnerships with foreign universities. But key to everything is the delivery of those courses and that educational, to deliver those courses in country. If we look at the second level education here, obviously all schools at the moment in the UAE and across much of the Middle East are currently delivering their courses remotely. Certainly the private schools are. at the state schools are somewhat different, but essentially some element of their coursework has been delivered remotely. I think the question mark there is many of them at the moment are simply just trying to replicate what they do in the classroom remotely, and that's not necessarily how that's going to progress in the short to medium term. I think if that continued situation continues, they're going to have to look at the content as it will reflect itself best for remote learning, as distinct from simply trying to replicate in the online environment what they're trying to do in the classrooms. In touching upon the whole sector, the whole area of manufacturing, bringing things home or bringing or shortening supply chains, I think that's going to be very much part of the ethos, not just here in the Middle East, but internationally. I think there's been quite a shock to the system in terms of how long supply lines are, and particularly how reliant countries have been on China, even for, you know, inputs into their own production. So I think a lot of companies are going through a very deep analysis of, you know, if they already produce, how they produce, where they get their inputs from. And also, if they're talking about the supply of basic necessities, how near those necessities are to them in terms of the manufacturing chain. I think realistically, one of those sectors that's top of that list is anything to do around the healthcare sector. I think, you know, there are certain, if we look at PPE in the context of COVID-19, a lot of that material can be produced locally. And some of it can be produced by use of new technology like 3D printing, for example. So I think, you know, there's going to be a push to be able to, A, build up stocks and supplies for certain types of healthcare products that will, you know, necessarily be there in case of a second wave of COVID-19. But also, there's been a lot of lessons learned from the last few months. And hopefully those lessons will translate into actions. And some of those actions are going to be around the actual production and procurement more readily of healthcare products within a geography, but maybe, you know, within a much closer and tighter turnaround time than currently is the case.
With that in mind then, Mike, what is it that you would be saying to client companies in terms of what measures they should be trying to implement in order to best adapt and react to what is this new reality that we now find ourselves living in?
Well, I mean, I suppose there's an element of crystal ball gazing with that, but I think some things are fairly well known. You know, I'm always somewhat reluctant to say things like, oh, things will never go back to be the way they were. In some industries, they will. In some industries, you know, I think there's been a real sea change. And, you know, the business model is either fractured or, you know, going forward is going to change substantially. So I think some of the, you know, the key takeaways at the moment in terms of our clients would be one, I mean, in the short term, realistically, we're not seeing any change in, let's say, going back to the old way of doing things this year. I don't see exhibitions happening in the wider Middle East region, particularly in Dubai. I think most of those big events, most of those activities that involve mass gatherings, physical mass gatherings, have really been pushed into 2021. And they will require, you know, not just the implementation of a set of protocols for how people act and react and interrogate with each other, but also some settling in time so that, you know, state authorities understand how people have acclimatized to what we're beginning to call the new normal. So realistically, what I'm not writing off 2020, I'm saying that, you know, in terms of, you know, many of the traditional types of business activities, you know, exhibiting, conferences, seminars, in the physical sense, realistically, that's pushed pretty much into 2021. I think for much of 2020, the focus is going to be on online measures and webinars, on video calls, on conferencing, video conferencing. But here's the rub on that. That also will begin to be tedious, monotonous as well. So there's going to be a constant call on clients to come up with newer ways of engaging through that medium. There was a euphoria, there was a push when people are putting out webinars, etc., at the beginning of COVID-19, and people are still doing it, and they're still doing it in terms of individual meetings with companies, etc., etc. But you're going to have to, by the end of this year, you know, into the third and fourth quarters, if you're looking to do something more substantial, you're going to have to figure out an extra wow factor for that. You know, and that's a hard thing to come up with, because, you know, there's a fatigue will set in terms of, you know, how often companies and users are going to be willing to engage in webinars, engage in kind of video conference calls without, you know, a particular purpose or reason. And I suppose the difficulty we have at the moment, we have a lot of uncertainty as to when where the end game is this year. So that's one, you know, not a warning factor, but one thing for, I think, for our clients to consider. It's not, you know, yes, communicate with the clients. Yes, communicate with end users. Yes, keep the communication up. Reflect back on what your end users are saying. But have in the back of your mind that you might need to do something extra. You might have to think of something a little bit special in terms of how you work through online media. Whether that is, you know, not just simply presenting your product, maybe you're introducing additional elements, maybe you're adding additional services that, you know, complement what you do. Maybe you're bringing in interesting people for them to talk to. Maybe through your own network, you can introduce your end users to someone with a unique set of outlooks, etc. You're looking at different ways to add value. And this year, it's going to be all about continuing that engagement with the client, how you add value to that process, and how to make it continue to make it interesting when in the absence of, you know, a situation where you don't have that physical one-to-one contact.
No question, Mike. I couldn't agree with you more in that regard. The companies will have to try to continue to adapt and evolve their approach in terms of how they try to engage with their buyers and with their partners as this situation continues to evolve. And in many ways, this podcast is an attempt to do that. Finally, Mike, is there any messages that you'd like to relay to anyone that's listening to this podcast today? And in particular, any final messages that you'd like to share with Enterprise Ireland client companies that are active across the Middle East, and indeed those that are thinking of beginning to export to the Middle East region?
Yeah, I mean, you know, back to one of my original points, which is about follow the numbers. So these are going to be maintain themselves as very interesting markets for Irish companies. One, particularly in the Gulf region, where we have a long history, we have good connections, we have a good reputation. And these markets, you know, will grow because their population, their size are growing. There are complications, obviously, with the moment with COVID-19, but with also in a very low oil prices. But again, all these countries need to diversify. It's important that Irish companies leverage those existing relationships, but also not to rest on their laurels. These are quite young and dynamic countries as well. There's a need to make new contacts at different generational levels, at different demographic points. You know, these are young countries that require not simply a continued response, but a constant updating of your response and your offering into the market. The other thing I'd say, too, is that, you know, you possibly need to look wider than just simply the Gulf, which has traditionally been the kind of the happy hunting ground for Irish companies, based on, though, that's, you know, the past history of business. We're beginning to see a lot of movements in Egypt, for example, once it gets over its current crisis, in terms of a move of certain types of production, particularly services, to Egypt. You've got quite a substantial increase in foreign direct investment into Egypt, not just from the traditional sources like the US, Europe, Japan, etc., but also investment from the Gulf into Egypt as well. So we're seeing quite a lot of industrial groups across the Gulf invest into Egypt, basically, you know, to meet the needs of their growing population. You're also beginning to see also certain production lines migrate. Countries like Morocco, where they're establishing a very substantial automotive, aviation sector, banking sector to service Africa. So it's not just a case of following the existing path lines. There are going to be new opportunities as well once this particular period is over. And likewise, to the north, we have countries that you know, are undergoing very substantial rebuilding programs following years of war and crisis. And those aren't necessarily countries you can base yourself in, but certainly they will throw off business into neighboring countries that many Irish companies can make the best of. I mean, as a key takeaway, you know, certain sectors are very hot on our list. Healthcare, as I mentioned, very strong. A bounce back in aviation once this crisis is over, that'll have to be faced. Education is a key part of the development of these countries as well. And, you know, food production. These countries all want to be as independent as possible in terms of self-provision of food. These are sectors that, you know, in many cases, irregardless of how the economy are going, are must-haves. And they're sectors that people and Irish companies have solutions that can, you know, really fit in very well. So, I mean, we're obviously going through a pretty bad time at the moment. But if you strip away this year, and this year in some ways may end up being a very forgettable year, there really are really strong nuggets, some really, really positive business outcomes that we see coming into the short to medium term. And those are sectors where Irish companies really have a chance to make an impact.
Yeah, thanks for sharing those insights, Mike. I think anyone that's exporting to the Middle East region at the moment or that's even considering to do so in the future would have found those comments particularly beneficial. So thanks for sharing those. Unfortunately, that brings us to the end of today's podcast. However, before we finish, Mike, I'd just like to thank you for taking the time to outline what it is exactly that's happening in the Middle East and indeed for also highlighting where you believe the opportunities may lie in the future.
Delighted to participate and wish our clients and Irish companies in general the very best to keep safe and, you know, look forward to a better second half of the year than the first half of the year.
Thanks, Mike. And thanks indeed to everyone that listened to today's podcast episode for what was the first episode of the Enterprise Ireland MENA podcast series. We'd love to hear from you. And if you do have any questions or feedback, please feel free to reach out via email, LinkedIn or Twitter. In the meantime, please stay safe and please tune in again for next week's episode, where we'll be outlining more updates and more insights from across the Middle East region. Until then, please take care and slánga fóill.
Thank you for listening to the Enterprise Ireland MENA podcast, your guide to winning business across the Middle East and North Africa. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Make sure to visit enterprise-ireland.com and irishadvantage.com for more information.